People who are new to Unitarian Universalism are sometimes surprised by the sources that nourish and enrich our faith. They may expect Jewish and Christian teachings. They may appreciate our openness to direct experience of mystery and wonder. They may have some positive feelings about wisdom from the world's traditions, or from the world's religions. And that may even extend to earth-centered traditions. But I am already stretching things too far for most people. In a world that has become increasingly interconnected, what people don't believe is still very important, and many walls are still firmly in place. Today, we are going to look over a few walls and open a few gates. We will look at some very old mythological characters and find out what they have to say to us. One will be busy piloting a boat. Two will be very busy fighting a monster. One will be keeping the peace and helping plants grow. Gods are busy, and they always have been. There is no God of vegging out. Like everything and everyone else, gods work with creation, transformation, and destruction. For example, some people say that the gods created human beings. Other people say that human beings created the gods. Personally, I think that both sides are right. People need gods, and gods need people. That seems to me to be a very good arrangement. As I learned about and wrote about the gods for this sermon, I found that I wanted musical accompaniment to my sermon. I found that I wanted to draw about them too. The three mandalas that are part of this service are simply personal expressions. They were enjoyable to make, and I hope that they will enrich your experience of this sermon when you see them. We all understand the importance of food as a source of energy that keeps our bodies alive and healthy. If we look at the importance of food in social relations and cultural expression, we more fully grasp its enormous importance. At the same time, the patterns of creation, transformation, and destruction are so important that they also exist deeply in human cultures. Both the importance of food and the essential patterns of life are so important that they influence almost everything that human beings do. In our own culture, we can immediately point out issues of land and water management, health, food aid, trade patterns and tariffs, cultural expressions and traditions, and uses and misuses of technology, all related to food. As we expect, these issues influence not only our everyday lives and practical aspects of those lives, but our spiritual tradition as well. I don't think that it will be difficult for us to connect with the spirituality of agriculture as it was practiced in ancient Hawaii. Specifically, we can think of Lono, the god of agriculture, and also the god of peace. Remarkably, Lono's power in Hawaiian life extended to the imposition of a period of peace each year. The period lasted from October to the following February. When we combine the fact that productive agriculture requires peace with the fact that productive agriculture is essential for an adequate food supply, we can see how a god of agriculture easily can almost be a god of life. The location of the Hawaiian Islands meant that the importation of food was, at that time, impossible for them. They had to live off of their own land. As a result, Lono was the spirit of a great deal of what ancient Hawaiians knew, valued, and revered. As Lono imposed peace and allowed for the production of food, his wife, Laka, the goddess of hula, represented the music, dance, social interaction, and history that were vital to the people. What would life be without those things? We have hints in the lives of prisoners, refugees, and the citizens of totalitarian regimes. The reduced, impoverished lives of such people can inspire us to express clearly and strongly the importance of cultural freedom in human life. All positive rhythms of life are valuable to us, to our minds, our bodies, and our spirits. It will not surprise you that green is a major color of the mandala of Lomo and Laka. Green is not only a color that suggests plants, it is also a color that symbolizes the heart and love. It seems pleasantly inevitable that green is a common color for gods who represent what is positive and helpful. I have come to feel that Lomo and Laka can live their peace, rhythm, and health in us. It is said that a woman's work is never done. When we hear about the ancient Egyptian goddess Nephthys, we find her in the same condition. Hardly surprising, is it? Nephthys accompanied the souls of worthy humans to their afterlife. She brought the darkness of night, sailing across the sky in her boat of dreams and deep mystery. Nephthys also joined her sister Isis to travel through the swamps of the Nile every year. They looked for the dismembered parts of the god Osiris. When they found and assembled all the pieces, spring would come again, grain would sprout, and Osiris would be able to rejoin his family. There was one more task for Nephthys. She was the goddess of the temple courtyard. The temple courtyard was not the place of ceremonies and sacrifices. Those took place in the buildings of the temple. The courtyard, the outer place, is the place of wondering, waiting, hoping, and fearing. It was literally the place for the outsiders, and Nephthys is there too. And if we think that myths are old-fashioned and not related to modern-day life, we can think of the problems and the issues and the hullabaloo that is being developed and taking place around outsiders as they try to enter our country. Very modern, very old. We could say that Nephthys is unobtrusive. She serves, she supports, she is at the edge, not at the center. And in those ways, she finds her path into people's lives. What is our response to her as we face creation, transformation, and destruction? How can we act supportively, unobtrusively, but effectively? Can we help someone relax and rest, as Nephthys helped people by sailing across the night sky? And when we think of people relaxing and resting, what came to my mind as I wrote that line was pictures I had just seen of children sleeping in cages on the floor. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. Can we help someone find what was lost, as Nephthys helped find the body of her brother-in-law Osiris? With Nephthys in the outer courtyard, can we help excluded people find a spiritual home? And could that spiritual home be this church? These are human issues, and therefore they are the issues of the gods, found in various forms throughout the centuries. Nephthys mandala combines the curves of the sky and water with the angles of temple architecture. The combination reminds us of the complexity of the goddess and the complexity of living in a huge and active world. How do we get the curves and angles to enrich each other, not fight each other? I guess that we learn to sail through the sky, to slog through the swamp, to support and comfort in the temple courtyard. No problem at all. May it be so. Before there were earth and sky, Tlatlikutli was the destructive goddess. She killed and destroyed without reason, and she was so unhappy that her cries and screams could be heard everywhere. Even her elbows and knees had mouths that could bite with teeth of flint. The powerful gods Quetzalcoatl and Tezcatlipuca, who were usually enemies, joined forces to curb Tlatlikutli's power. They became serpents and tore Tlatlikutli in two. They threw half of her body upward to make the sky. They laid the other half flat and marked the four directions, thereby creating the surface of the earth. The two gods viewed themselves as connected to Tlatlikutli. Because of that sense of connection, they turned the destructive goddess into springs and wells, grass and flowers, caverns and rivers, mountains and valleys. She was no longer terrifying. She had been transformed. We live in an era of fast and far-reaching communications. News programs bring us stories about earthquakes in Iran, droughts in sub-Saharan Africa, and dying coral reefs near Australia. And if that is too depressing, we can add bombings, assassinations, and terrorism just to cheer ourselves up. The destruction and pain that we see around us may make us wonder if Tlatlikutli exists today in her original form, teeth and all. Nevertheless, the importance of the story of Tlatlikutli is in change. Things do not need to end in death and destruction. From the body of a great and suffering bringer of death came rivers and plants. From an act of violence, the killing of Tlatlikutli, came fertility and safety. This kind of transformation reminds me of the high school students rallying and striking for an end to death by disturbed people who had access to guns. From death can come life. From victimization can come defense of human life and development. These are the hopes, the beliefs that we must never lose. It is an especially interesting point of this myth that while the two powerful gods fought and killed Tlatlikutli, she bit off the foot of one of them. Life and death intertwine, giving and taking in ways that seem mysterious and endless. Even a god is not complete, is not perfect. Not complete, not perfect. Do those sound familiar? Was anyone looking in their mirror this morning, for example? They sound familiar to me. That is why I love the myths. They speak to us today of what is happening today. They speak to us of our very lives. The mandala for the earth monster, Quetzalcoatl and Tezcatlipuca, is based on the contrast between darkness and light. The contrast flows out of the extraordinary conflict among the characters of the myth. it may also be a way of connecting highly contrasting parts of our own lives or of the world that we see around us. We confront things that range from spousal abuse to floating islands of trash to women who can suddenly drive and who have a chance to learn. We live in light, in light and darkness, as we always have, taking the shadows very seriously. But for most of us, the monster can be turned into a source of life.